Welcome to the AQA Psychology Revision Podcast. I'm your tutor for today, and in the next 10 minutes, we're going to cover everything you need to know about eating behavior for your A-level psychology exam. Whether you're sitting paper 3 for the first time or doing a final revision sweep, this episode is packed with the knowledge, evaluation points, and exam technique you need to hit those top bands. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get started. Eating behavior sits in paper 3, and it's one of those topics that rewards students who can genuinely engage with the nature-nurture debate. Examiners are looking for you to move beyond simple description and into real critical analysis. The assessment objective split is 40% AO1, that's your knowledge and understanding, and 40% AO3, which is your evaluation. So for every fact you learn, you need a matching critical point. Keep that in mind throughout this episode. Let's begin with the core concepts. Section 1, food preferences, evolutionary and neural explanations. Why do we eat what we eat? The evolutionary explanation argues that our food preferences were shaped by natural selection during our ancestral environment, the environment of evolutionary adaptedness. Our ancestors who preferred calorie-dense foods, high in fats and sugars, were more likely to survive periods of food scarcity and pass on their genes. This explains why humans today have an innate preference for sweet and fatty foods, even when calorie restriction would be healthier. We also have a neophobia, a fear of new foods, which evolved as a protective mechanism against potentially toxic, unfamiliar plants. And we have a preference for bitter-tasting foods being rejected, since bitterness often signals toxins in nature. Now, the neural explanation focuses on the hypothalamus. This is a critical area for exam purposes, and candidates frequently confuse the two key regions, so listen carefully. The lateral hypothalamus, or LH, is the hunger center. When blood glucose levels drop, the LH is activated and stimulates eating behavior. Damage to the LH in animal studies, such as those by Anand and Brobeck in 1951, caused animals to stop eating entirely, a condition called aphagia. The ventromedial hypothalamus, or VMH, is the satiety center. When blood glucose rises after eating, the VMH signals that we are full and eating should stop. Damage to the VMH causes hyperphagia, continuous overeating and obesity. Remember the mnemonic. LH is lateral and lunchtime. It starts eating. VMH is very much full. It stops eating. Beyond the hypothalamus, two key hormones regulate hunger. Ghrelin is produced by the stomach when it is empty and signals hunger to the brain. Leptin is produced by fat cells and signals satiety. The more body fat you carry, the more leptin is released, suppressing appetite. This is a beautiful negative feedback loop, but it breaks down in obesity where leptin resistance can develop. Section 2, social and psychological influences on food preference. Biological mechanisms alone cannot explain the full complexity of human eating. Social learning theory associated with Bandura proposes that food preferences are acquired through observation and imitation of role models. Children observe what their parents, peers, and media figures eat and model that behavior, especially when the model is seen as similar, attractive, or rewarded. Birch's 1980 research demonstrated this powerfully. Children who observed peers eating a disliked vegetable subsequently increased their own consumption of that vegetable. This is direct evidence of vicarious reinforcement operating in food choice. Cultural influences are also significant. The mere exposure effect, Sajonk's principle that repeated exposure to a stimulus increases liking, explains why food preferences are culturally specific. Japanese children prefer sushi, British children prefer chips. Neither preference is biologically determined, both are learned through repeated exposure in a cultural context. Mood and emotional state also influence eating. Research by Garg, Wansink, and Inman in 2007 found that people watching sad films consumed significantly more popcorn than those watching happy films, suggesting that negative mood triggers comfort eating. This links to the concept of emotional eating, where food is used as a coping mechanism for stress, sadness, or boredom. Section 3. Anorexia nervosa, explanations. Anorexia nervosa is characterized by restriction of energy intake, intense fear of gaining weight, and a distorted body image. But remember, in the exam, you are not asked to describe the clinical characteristics. You are asked to explain the disorder. Candidates who spend their answer listing DSM-5 criteria will not access the higher mark bands. The biological explanation focuses on genetics. Holland and colleagues conducted a twin study in 1988 and found a concordance rate of 56% in monozygotic twins compared to just 7% in dizygotic twins. This suggests a significant genetic component. However, the concordance rate is not 100%, which means environmental factors must also play a role. This is a classic AO3 point. Neurochemically, serotonin dysregulation has been implicated. Kay and colleagues found elevated levels of serotonin metabolites in recovered anorexic patients, suggesting that serotonin overactivity may contribute to the anxiety and obsessive behaviors associated with the disorder. The psychological explanation draws on Brooks's psychodynamic work. Brooke argued in 1973 that anorexia develops from a distorted sense of self and a need for control, often rooted in enmeshed family relationships where the child's autonomy was not respected. This links to Mnuchin's family systems theory, which identified patterns of enmeshment, rigidity, and conflict avoidance in families of anorexic patients. Mnuchin's 1978 study reported an 86% recovery rate following family therapy, which provides strong support for the family systems approach. Section 4, Obesity, Explanations. Obesity is defined as a body mass index above 30 and represents a significant public health issue. The neural explanation, again, implicates the hypothalamus. VMH damage leads to hyperphagia and weight gain. Leptin resistance is also a key mechanism. In obese individuals, the brain becomes desensitized to leptin signals, so the satiety message is not received effectively, perpetuating overeating. The evolutionary explanation for obesity draws on the thrifty gene hypothesis proposed by Neal in 1962. This argues that genes promoting efficient fat storage were adaptive in ancestral environments of food scarcity, but in modern environments of food abundance, these same genes predispose individuals to obesity. This is a strong AO3 point because it illustrates how evolutionary adaptations can become maladaptive in changed environments. Psychologically, Broach's work on obesity mirrors her work on anorexia. She argued that obese individuals eat in response to external cues rather than internal hunger signals, a failure of interoceptive awareness. Schachter's 1968 externality theory supported this, demonstrating that obese participants were more responsive to external food cues, such as the sight and smell of food, than to internal hunger signals. Section 5. Dieting, the boundary model. Herman and Mack proposed the boundary model in 1975 to explain the psychology of dieting and why diets so often fail. The model proposes that all eaters operate between two biological boundaries, a hunger boundary at the lower end and a satiety boundary at the upper end. Between these two boundaries lies the zone of biological indifference, where eating is not driven by biological need. Unrestrained eaters eat within this zone and stop naturally at the satiety boundary. Restrained eaters, dieters, set an additional cognitive diet boundary within the zone below the satiety boundary. They aim to stop eating before biological satiety is reached. The problem arises when this cognitive diet boundary is breached, for example, by eating a forbidden food. At this point, the restrained eater engages in what Herman and Polavy called counter-regulatory eating or the what-the-hell effect. Having broken the diet, they abandon restraint entirely and overeat. This explains why dieting so frequently leads to binge eating episodes. Research support comes from Wardle and Beals's 1988 experiment, which randomly assigned obese women to a diet condition, an exercise condition, or a control condition. Those in the diet condition showed increased food intake in a laboratory taste test, directly supporting the counter-regulatory eating prediction of the boundary model. Now let's move to exam tips and common mistakes. Tip 1. Never confuse the LH and VMH. The lateral hypothalamus is the hunger center. It stimulates eating. The ventromedial hypothalamus is the satiety center. It stops eating. This distinction is worth marks in almost every exam sitting. Tip 2. For 16 mark. Discuss questions. Your structure should be approximately 6 marks of AO1 knowledge and 10 marks of AO3 evaluation. Do not write a 50-50 split. Evaluation is weighted more heavily. Tip 3. Generic evaluation will not reach the top bands. Saying, "This explanation is reductionist," earns no marks on its own. You must explain why it is reductionist and what the implications are. For example, the neural explanation is reductionist because it reduces complex eating behavior to the activity of two hypothalamic regions, ignoring the role of cultural, social, and emotional factors. This has the implication that treatments focusing solely on neurochemistry may be less effective than holistic approaches that address psychological and social influences. Tip 4. The cause and effect problem is your most powerful evaluation point for neural explanations. Does the neurochemistry cause the eating disorder, or does the eating disorder cause the neurochemical changes? This is a genuine methodological limitation that examiners credit highly. Tip 5. For any question involving anorexia nervosa, make sure you are explaining the disorder, not describing it. The command word explain requires you to give reasons and mechanisms, not a list of symptoms. Tip 6. When a question says, refer to the information in the stem, you must explicitly quote or paraphrase the stem material before linking it to theory. This secures your AO2 application marks. Now for our quickfire recall quiz, cover your notes and try to answer these questions before I give you the answers. Question 1. What is the function of the lateral hypothalamus? Answer. It is the hunger center. It stimulates eating when blood glucose drops. Question 2. What does the VMH do when damaged in animal studies? Answer. Damage causes hyperphagia, continuous overeating, and obesity. Question 3. What is the concordance rate for anorexia nervosa in monozygotic twins, according to Holland et al., 1988? Answer. 56%. Question 4. What is the what-the-hell effect in the boundary model? Answer. Counterregulatory eating. When a restrained eater breaks their cognitive diet boundary, they abandon restraint entirely and overeat. Question 5. Name one piece of research supporting social learning theory's role in food preference. Answer. Birch, 1980. Children increase consumption of a disliked vegetable after observing peers eating it. Question 6. What hormone signals hunger from an empty stomach? Answer. Ghrelin. Question 7. What did Wardle and Beals, 1988, find in their study of dieting? Answer. Women in the diet condition showed increased food intake in a laboratory taste test, supporting counter-regulatory eating. And finally, let's wrap up. Today we covered the full breadth of eating behavior for AQA A-level psychology. The key themes to carry into your exam are the interplay between biological and psychological explanations, always evaluate one against the other, the importance of specific research evidence, Holland, Birch, Herman, and Mack, Wardle and Beals, Brooke, Mnookin, and the issues and debates framework, particularly nature versus nurture, reductionism versus holism, and biological determinism. Remember, examiners reward candidates who can argue, not just describe. Every AO1 point you make should be followed by an AO3 evaluation that genuinely engages with its strengths and limitations. Good luck in your exam. You've got this. Until next time, keep revising smart.